Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Karma is an organisation in North Tipperary. It's based in Neenah. And Karma, C-A-R-M-H-A, stands for Connection and Recovery in Mental Health and Addiction. And Yvonne Moroney, who has benefited from the work of Karma and is now working for them, joins us in studio. How are you doing, Yvonne?
How are you, Ray?
And so does the founder of Karma, Donie Ryan. How are you doing, Donie?
Not too bad, Ray, thanks.
Good. We'll get you your microphones up there. Okay, thank you so much for coming up, and it's great to see you in studio. Yvonne, I'm going to talk to you first about your story,
okay.
And then we'll bring Donie in and we'll find out more about Karma, because I would imagine your story is similar to a lot of the people who use Karma.
Yes.
Would that be fair enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More or less.
Are you born and bred in Neenah?
I was.
Right.
I am. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask what age you are?
I'm 49 this year.
Right. Okay, that's important because people listen to, you know, they can't see you, so
yeah.
that puts you in a certain age group and people know what age you were and what decade you grew up in. So you had a tough childhood.
I did, yeah.
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 And I asked this question because it's my favourite question since I spoke to Edith Eger. She's a woman who survived Auschwitz. And it is, when did you stop being a child? She says it's a really important question.
Oh, God. About 10, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when the abuse started.
No.
No,
the abuse
started before that. Right.
At the age of 6.
Okay.
Till I was just 14 when it stopped.
Right.
Years later, he was convicted and sentenced into prison.
Right. Yeah. I'm wondering why you say 10 then. When did you stop being a child at 10?
I don't know. I suppose I started to get... my mental health problems would have started around 11.
Right.
You know, hearing voices. Facial tics. I used to make a lot of noises. You know, that constantly twitching, you know, which I learnt later on were coping mechanisms for... earlier on in my childhood.
Of course, dealing with what had happened to you, with trauma.
Yeah, and around 13, 14, I started getting sleep paralysis, and that has stayed with me all my life.
Describe that to people.
Sleep paralysis is when you're falling asleep or waking up, you can't move your body and you can only move your eyes, but you can hallucinate and see things. So it was very scary.
Yeah.
It's extremely scary stuff, like.
And some scientists use that to explain why people see ghosts, for example, and that. Well,
yes.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
So that was happened to you to your 14. Your mother became sick. What age were you when
I was 14. My mommy got cancer.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And she got it bad.
She did. She got it in her breast first, and she got it removed. And it over the 6 years, she died when I was 20. So she was. It was on and off. You know, she got into remission, and then she got it back.
Yeah.
You know. So,
this is your story, not Tony's. So
I know. I know.
Don't mind. We should have put him in a booth after all.
I don't know. I'm so nervous.
No, you're completely fine. It's just a chat. And you're an expert on your own life. You know, it's your life. That's what we're talking about. You know,
I'm mad.
But you see, there are reasons for it. There are reasons for it. And were you the primary care for your mother?
Towards the end, yeah.
Were you? And
yeah.
How did that happen? Because I know you're the youngest of 9 children.
I'm the second youngest.
Second youngest, sorry.
Yeah. Just everybody had moved on, you know, married and got jobs. And so that, like, when I was 17, 18, the only ones that were left at home was myself and my two brothers and my dad. So I took on kind of like, I made up her chart of tablets and I would give her... her medication.
And that's important, isn't it?
Yes.
That
because I learned what medication done then.
Yes.
I learned what helped her sleep, you know, helped her relax. And that's when she died when I was 20. That's where my drug started. I started taking my mother's medication.
And was there a lot of it left?
There was, yeah. Her wardrobes were full of it.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody ever came to collect it.
Right, and you knew, as you say, you knew what was there to relax her to.
Yeah, I learned. I taught myself, like, you know. So then I medicated myself because, you know, my world had ended when she died. You know, I she was everything. You know.
And did she know that you've been abused, Yvonne? No, no, no. And so you started self-medicating, literally, because there were prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did that go on for? When did
that went on for about a year. And then I was sent to mental health when I was 22. So then I was medicated more.
Right.
You know, I'm not like bad-mouthing them or anything.
No,
but
no,
like
that's
what...
That was the system.
There was no talking back then.
Yeah.
You know, 25 years ago, it was just medicate you and send you home. And that's exactly what happened.
Right.
And I just got worse.
So you were a person who'd come from taking prescription drugs, going into an institution, and they gave you more prescription drugs
yeah.
to try and deal with that.
Yeah.
When you say it like that, it sort of doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No, no. And you were sent home.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I was put on these tablets that I'm only off 3 years, like.
Right.
Like, I'm clean and sober three years in July. You know, this was a lifelong 25 years of taking these sort of tablets all the time.
Okay.
You know, different.
And then, I suppose, as often happens, you felt you needed something else or...
So I graduated then
from
prescription drug, then I found speed. You know, right. Speed was my main one.
And was it easy enough to find speed in Nina?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What effect does speed have on you?
You just... It actually blocks away your feelings.
Right.
But you have energy and you can do things. I didn't take drugs to party. I took drugs to survive, you know, from one day to the next, to get energy, you know. And when I didn't have that, it would be painkillers that would... you know, substitute.
Yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? Getting out of your head.
Yeah.
And your head wasn't a nice place to be in at all.
Absolutely not. Oh. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Do you think a lot of people understand that? Because it's interesting that you specify there, I didn't take drugs to party. No.
And you know what, right? A lot of people do understand it, you know? Because I wasn't a massive, you know, maybe at one stage, maybe in between 23 and 25, there would have been a party stage. But the rest of my life up to the age of 45 was to survive, you know.
Yeah.
Because when I was 25, it was my first day in Clonmel mental psychiatric unit. And I was there for a couple of weeks. But when I came out, I went to Asherie, a fantastic treatment centre.
For addiction?
For addiction.
Yeah.
And I came home when I was 25, you know, and it was like, I stayed clean and sober for a while, but memories and the trauma from stuff, I couldn't deal with it in my head. You know, my past was out in the front of my head constantly. So I slipped back into addiction.
Yeah.
And
so taking drugs is like switching off the movie that's going on in your head.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when you get sober, the movie's still running.
Yeah, and it's worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I anytime I drank, the drink would make me get arrested.
Right.
Yeah.
You're notorious in Nina.
No.
I believe.
Don't say that. Don't only nodding.
True,
I know. I look at.
Well, you were angry.
I'm not.
You?
I was very angry. Yeah.
Yeah. With who? With everybody or?
With everybody.
Yeah, right. Why?
I don't know. It's just like when my mother died. It was like I hated everybody and right. I hated everything, and I just wanted to. Yeah, I've hurt a lot of people, and I am extremely sad about that, you know.
So you've actually hit people?
Yeah,
yeah,
I've put people in hospital.
Have you?
Yeah, and it's not a nice thing to
no.
say, but it's horrible. Yeah.
Try and describe that anger that you must have been going through.
It's like a black rage. When I used to lose it, I wouldn't remember.
Right.
Until I'd wake up in the cop station in the cell, or one of my sisters would be waking me up in the bed, you know, what did you do, you know? And I'd be like, why? What are you talking about? You know, there was a lot of nights like that.
Yeah. And when you were doing that, when you were waking up in the Garda station or wherever, when you looked in the mirror after that, what were you saying to yourself?
Oh, I've always saw myself as horrible.
Have you?
Donny would have asked me all through. I mean, I joined Donny's group 8 years ago in mental health, and he'd always go around the room and ask us how we saw ourselves today, and I'd always say scumbag. And that's all I would always say, you know, that's the way I saw myself.
Yeah.
Because I never felt any way good, you know. I felt worthless always.
The poor thing doesn't even come close to it. Like, how could you possibly have any positive self-image when, you know, what happened to you from the age of six? That's, you hadn't got a hope really, had you?
No, but I had great help from my family, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but my sisters and my brothers, but, you know, I had to hit rock bottom a lot of times before I could come up.
So you were in and out of
psychiatric units.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And did you get a diagnosis? Did they give you a diagnosis?
Well, not really, because they never could pinpoint what was going on.
Right.
I never had a diagnosis till about 4 years ago when I was told I was suffering with PTSD.
Right.
And I hadn't a clue that I could be suffering with something like that.
Yeah.
As you know, people think that's a soldier thing.
Yes.
You know.
But it's any trauma, you see.
It is any trauma.
Yeah.
And I've learned that, yeah. You know.
And you went 8 years of trauma you went through. You poor thing. Mm-hmm. And this man sitting across me has sort of saved your life in a way.
Absolutely.
Has he, or is that overstating it?
Well, I will tell you one thing. Okay. The reason I'm on this earth is my children. Okay.
Right.
My three beautiful children. And then the other reason, Donny and my partner, Sean.
Okay. Right. Okay. Right.
Sean and Donny.
Yeah. I got with Donny 2009.
Yeah.
I started with Donny down in mental health.
Yeah. And so it's karma, connection and recovery in mental health and addiction. We spoke to Mary last week as well, and your story is quite similar to Mary's. And it sounds to me like the story that you know, is replicated in a lot of people who suffer from addiction, and that's trauma. Some people reckon that 70 to 75% of people who suffer from addiction have suffered a childhood trauma.
I think so, and at least 70-75%, if not more. The way Yvonne introduced it, like when you think about it, right? I was working in mental health, and she came through the mental health system to me, which was, you were referred to me because of the addiction stuff. And when you think of like all the trauma that there had been and all of the losses, Lorna had died, I think.
Yeah.
Just then.
Who's Lorna?
My sister.
Your sister, yeah.
And your mum had died.
Yeah. My mum, yeah. Yeah.
And we were trying to talk about recovery and feelings and stuff like that. But the real problem was trying to get beyond the, even to make a connection with the trauma. Because when I said it to you first, there wasn't, it didn't really register with you for, about a year?
Yeah.
So you made no connection between
my trauma and addiction. No
connection whatsoever?
No.
And you were a woman in your 40s, your early 40s?
Well, no, 20s.
No, but I mean, when you came to Donny, you were in your early 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 30s.
Yes, yeah. Sorry.
But there was none. I'm after killing somebody, is it? There was none.
Sorry.
And it took quite a long time. See, we do this laughing as a kind of a
therapy thing.
It's actually a coping mechanism. But,
no, that's fair enough. I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
After ages of, and it was difficult because to be fair, you weren't connected to anything really. It was totally disconnected would probably describe how things were. And then there was one afternoon, because I used to see you in an afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not really sure what triggered it, but Yvonne kind of crossed her hands and put her arms on the desk like that. And when she puts her head down, you can't see her face at all because the hair goes down. And it was three or four huge tears fell onto the desk.
Right.
And that was the first sign of any real emotion that you had shown, I think.
Yeah. Do you remember it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, this is a teardrop is the symbol for karma now. Oh, and right. It's based on that oh, incident, right? But it took a lot of sort of slow, easy, you know, like...
It took 12 years, don't it?
Yeah, but even in the beginning, to make the connection between it was like just lots of time and, you know, trying mm-hmm. to persuade you that you were going to get recovery, that you could do it. Because mm-hmm. I believed, from the very day I met Yvonne, I believed that she could do it. Yeah. I knew she could do it.
Yeah.
It was going to take a while to get to that point. And she's been involved in everything with karma all the time since. All the time.
You see, you have mental health and addiction.
Yeah.
And there's that it's not, I wouldn't say it's a buzz phrase, but it's a phrase that's used and people use it and they say that there isn't enough of it in this country and there definitely aren't enough services to deal with it. And it's dual diagnosis. So if we've established already that 70 to 75% of addiction is caused by childhood trauma, which leads to PTSD, sometimes in your case, so it's a mental health issue, then surely you have to deal with both of them together. It doesn't make sense to deal with them independently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even dual diagnosis, that probably doesn't cover it because there's lots of different issues, aren't there? You know what I mean? You have the addiction stuff, you have the mental health, but you have a whole lot of other issues that'll have to be dealt with as well. But yeah, I mean, the piece in the paper... I David Riley said in the paper that I said that the system is nuts. Well, what I meant was it really doesn't make sense to try to deal with the addiction in one place and the mental health somewhere else. And the history is that if you go to the addiction services, they'll tell you they don't do mental health. And if you go to mental health, they say they can't do the addiction stuff. So you're
all over the place. If you present with a mental health issue, they'll probably tell you, we can't deal with you until you're clean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has actually happened.
Right.
With one of the girls, she had a huge problem with codeine. And I walked into an office and they were just saying to her, we can't help you until you stop using. But that's not true. Because we've proven time and again that we can work with people while they're still using and while they still have the active addiction.
That's very important.
Isn't that essential?
About karma,
isn't that essential?
I think it is. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But
because you can't compartmentalise your addiction and your trauma, can you?
No.
You can't say, I'm going to park the trauma outside the door now and I'm going to deal my addiction. That's not possible.
And
you don't be born wanting, I'm going to be an addict.
That wasn't your ambition. No.
And I think it was even more difficult is that when people get to the point of where you were at, where Yvonne was at, their lives are still chaotic. So instead of making it handier for them to avail of an integrated service, we tell them they've got to go here, there, and there, and probation services or TOSLA, whatever it is, and go to psychiatry and go to addiction services. So it makes it much more difficult for them.
There should be a one-stop shop.
Yep. There are services that do it, but we really need to have it integrated, that you deal with all the stuff in one place. Because you know the lads, when they stop using, their feelings and emotions are all over the place. And you know, you said, like, sit with the emotions.
Yeah.
It's very difficult when you've come off of everything to just be able to...
But that's the movie. As I say, to use that analogy, the movie continues to play.
Yeah.
And all you want to do is stop it.
Yeah.
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 And then you need sort of pretty strong tools to do that, don't you?
You do.
Yeah. So talk to me a bit about that then, when you stop getting out of your head on drugs and you had to face up to your trauma.
Well, it wasn't just like, you know, I woke up and you know, it was a gradual over years of being with Donny. I was with Donny 4 years before I joined his group, one of his groups. That was the best decision I'd ever made in my entire life, was to join the group. They're fantastic. You know, we're all together for the last 8 years and there new people come, you know, people come and go. But so I gradually kind of like, you know, I'd try and get clean. I would make Donny do drug tests on me, you know, to try and stop, you know. But I suppose when I was 44, 45, I really hit a really dark place, you know. And I'll only say this about it is that it was either, you know, I was going to give up or, you know, I had to fight.
Mm.
And I fought And it took me 12 months, but I came off 9 different substances over a 12-month period of bringing myself down off them.
And some of them were prescription? Some of them?
Most of them were prescription.
Right, okay. And did you drink?
No, I came off the drink, everything.
Right.
Yeah, 12 months of getting sick, really extremely, extremely sick.
But what about your head then?
Okay, so my head, I cry a lot. I cried a lot in that first year. And at the same time, karma was getting up, you know, like the community meetings were being held to try and form a place.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to go to all the meetings, no matter how sick I was. Sometimes I'd sit in the meetings, I'd be just crying at the back. You know, I had to be there because I knew there was a purpose for me in karma, you know. What did you ask me?
No, I was asking about your head because, we've been talking about using drugs to blot out what happened, all the bad stuff. So when you don't have the drugs to do that...
Well, then everything
comes
back.
And it re-emerges, yeah. And how do you deal with that?
Everything comes back and a lot more comes back that you don't even realise. You know, right. I still wake up and have new memories that I've never, ever had. You know,
now how do you cope with those?
I'm going to tell you how I done it, okay?
Right.
So after I came off of everything, okay, I cried a lot and I get sick and whatever. My kids' dad used to take them on a Wednesday and a Thursday night. So then I was kind of like involved in karma then. So I'd never ever kind of like been on my own and stayed on my own in my house. Like I hated it, you know. So I started on a Wednesday and Thursday. I'd go home from karma on a Wednesday and I'd lock myself into the house.
Right.
Okay, and I'd sit with everything.
Right.
Okay, and I'd cry and I'd scream. And the neighbours never reported me, but they must think I'm fucking nuts. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Ray. I'm so sorry.
That's completely fine. Yeah.
You know, and
that's,
and
on
that's,
your own.
Yeah.
On your own.
And I wouldn't come out till a Thursday evening. Well, Thursday after when the kids would be home from school. And I'd done that for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it started to get better, you know. It was like I had to rewire my whole brain. Everything was negative. All my thoughts, everything that came from my mind was negative. So it was like I had to rewire it and replace the negative with positive. And that was extremely hard. But it's possible.
Yeah.
I've done it.
Yeah.
You know?
It must have been, because Nina isn't a big place.
No.
And you were so notorious that but I'm just saying your recovery must, you know, people must know about your recovery as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Like, you know, not many people would have saluted me in my 20s, but when I go downtown now, Tony says I'm like a celebrity because everyone's like, how are you?
She is, yeah. She's a total celebrity now.
But, yeah. You know, and it's still hard.
Oh, I'd say it is.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still learning and I'm still trying to cope with stuff, you know, and everyone, like, I say to the lads, life is still shit, but I can handle it better.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. So it sounds to me like our, you know, mental health services haven't been fit for purpose for a long time. And in a country that has a serious problem with alcohol, you know, before you go near prescription drugs and illicit drugs.
Yeah. I worked in mental health. That's where we would have come across each other first. And they're really stretched. The funding, the facilities, what's needed for mental health is not up to scratch. But that's not, the people in mental health work really hard.
Yeah.
And they do the really work. Because I had worked in that place, Asheree, before as well. So I had the experience of both. But, you know, to say like that things aren't fit for purpose, I suppose what we found, at the time in Nina, the only place to go, there was a service down in the community service, but the groups that we had in the mental health service became the place to be. That all, we had 3 groups.
Yeah.
And what happened then, Dr. Marie Uppaboon came as a junior doctor as well, and she had an interest in addiction. She would have spoken to me quite a bit about it. So between us, we started what we call motivational groups, And then we got the groups together. We took each group individually and we asked them what helped if to recovery, what hindered, right. And what did they want.
And what came out on top?
What came out was that there was no mention of medication, there was no mention of doctors, and there was no mention of hospitals. What they wanted was a place that they could access when they needed to,
right.
To get treatment when you wake up in the morning and you say, I'm going to do something with this, they could go to a place.
To talk?
Yeah.
Is it all talk?
Yeah. That's what they wanted. And they didn't want to feel judged and they didn't want to feel stigmatised. Yeah. Those were the three things. So we started a community groups that... Just meetings. Yeah. And we didn't even advertise it. We just started it in the pastoral centre and about 50 people showed up.
Hold on for a sec. I just have to get a commercial break out of the way and I'll do that and we'll talk a little bit more after that. Hold on for a sec.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're speaking to Yvonne Moroney and Donie Ryan from Karma, C-A-R-M-H-A, and you can find them at karmaireland.ie, and they need support. You don't get any funding from the government?
No.
Do you? No.
We don't. Right. We got some funding for the girls, Carmel and Yvonne went, I said back to college. You said you only went once. They went back to DCU to do peer support and they trained and qualified as peer supporters. And the roles of peer support that Yvonne is in now was funded by Rethink Ireland.
Right.
Now that's limited. So, but we've managed to get some grants and the locals have been great. The fundraising has been amazing. But we don't have a statutory, funding.
We need groups like Karma all over the country, don't we?
Yes.
Because
we
the think problem with addiction and drugs is huge.
We know it works.
We know it works.
Yes.
They're not just...
I always say to Donnie, how do we know that we're doing a good job? He says, if they come back, Look at you.
We do believe it does work. It's really good, yeah.
Tell Yvonne that she gives hope to those who try to live day by day from loss of hope and addiction. I'll remember her words today. And two, the most amazing one for people. Yvonne is an inspiration to everyone in Karma. Went to DCU last year and is an accomplished peer worker. And Donie is a lifesaver. Yvonne's story is inspiring and I love her laugh. And my name is Dermot Fennell. I did a peer support course in DCU with Yvonne. It was level 8 course to support people struggling with their mental health. And the woman you have in front of you did it. Found it tough, like a lot of us did at times, but she saw it through. This woman has a lot to give and worth listening to. Fair play, Yvonne. DCU class 2019-2020.
Wow,
that's
Dermot
there.
That's lovely.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I think it's important that people hear more stories like that so they can understand what's going on in people's lives and maybe they won't be as judgmental.
Exactly. And recovery is possible,
recovery
no matter
is possible.
What
and
age you are.
Yes,
yeah.
Your story is one of hope as well.
If I can do it, anyone can do it.
Right. Yvonne Moroney, thanks very much. Donie
Ryan,
thank you.
Thanks,
you. And it's Toshi and I'm the Free Skelton and Nook to La Kirana Farta.